of you through your word. Lord, I pray that as we approach you through your word this morning, that you would help us to view you as high and lifted up, that we would understand in our own finite minds your incredible holiness and your amazing grace and the love that you have and show for us as believers. I pray that you would impress that upon us. I pray you'd help us to walk through history and looking at your hand and how you've directed history for your glory and for the redemption of mankind and my personal good. Thank you for that. I pray that you would just guide us in your truth this morning, and we ask this all in your name. Amen. I do have about 25 copies of notes up here if you don't have notes. Now, these are the notes that I gave out like 4 weeks ago when we started the plagues. So if you don't have, and so what I did was, rather than printing a bunch of blanks that you have to fill in, I actually have the blanks filled in up until plague number 7. So you'll be able to just catch on. We are, in this class, working our way through the book of Exodus. Actually, working our way through the entire Pentateuch, and we are ensconced in Exodus right now. Once we get past 20, we'll move a little faster. I'm convinced we'll move a little faster. But this is foundational stuff for the nation of Israel. And because it's foundation for Israel, it's foundational for us as believers. So that's why we're spending the time in Genesis that we did and in Exodus that we have to this point. So just so you know, that's what's going on. We've been working through the plagues, and really what is going on in the plagues. Again, since I was gone last week, I want to just take some time to get us caught back up. What's going on in the plagues is God is orchestrating the release of Israel from Egypt. They have gone down into Egypt as 70. They've grown into a great nation there, and now they're in the process. God is in the process of taking them from Egypt back up to the promised land where they will settle as Israel up there. And because of their great, the natural resource they are for Pharaoh, really they are for him a natural resource of slave labor, he does not want to let them go. He doesn't want to let them go. He wants to keep them in the land. And he's not even willing to let them go for what's been asked for every time to this point. It's for a time to go out into the wilderness, do a 3-day sacrifice and come back. Moses has not yet asked to go completely. It's always been an ask that says, let our people go and sacrifice. And so that's all that's been asked for so far, with the understanding that we know ahead of time that what God is doing, what Moses is asking for and has asked for 3 days, but what God is doing is orchestrating the complete and total release of Israel from Egypt through these series of 10 plagues that build upon each other. And again, we've noticed that he is actually in these plagues attacking at least one, maybe two of the Egyptian gods, and demonstrating that God, Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever you want to call his name, that God is stronger than and greater than and superior to all the gods of Egypt. And so that's what he's working through doing. And he's done that now through 6 plagues. First plague was, of course, the water turned to blood, the Nile turned to blood. Second plague was frogs. Third plague was gnats. Fourth plague was flies. Fifth plague was diseased and dead livestock. Sixth plague was boils. And now we're to the 7th plague found in Exodus chapter 9, verses 13 through 35. And I'll just introduce it. The Lord said to Moses, rise up early in the morning and present yourself before Pharaoh. Say to him, thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For this time I will send all my plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people, so that you may know there is none like me in all the earth. For now, by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, that you would have been cut off from the earth. But for this purpose, I have raised you up to show you my power so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. So what God says here through Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh is, all right, you've said no so many times. Now it's time I'm going to get serious. Now it's going to come to this point. Everything that's happened is there's been sickness. There's not really been sickness. There's been water turned to blood, which that's not fun, all right? I get that that's not fun, but there was apparently a workaround. They could dig trenches and find water that way. There was the gnats or that attacked and bit, but they didn't kill. They didn't kill. There were the flies that came and bit and bit hard and didn't kill. There were the boils that came up but didn't kill. There was the livestock that was killed, but not people that were killed. Nothing to this point, nothing to this point, no plague has resulted in death to this point. And now God says that is going to change. That is going to change. From this point on, from this plague on, there is going to be death as a result of the plagues that you that God is sending upon them. And the death is going to escalate as we get as we move through the process. Now, in this plague, he's actually going to give them a way to avoid dying. He's going to give them a way, and he's going to demonstrate to them that if they follow him, if they obey what he says to do, they will not die in this plague. And some of them listen, some of them take heed and spare their livestock and spare themselves, but there are those that don't listen and those who end up dying. So that's what he says to this point in summary there. It's this, okay, I could have done this from the beginning. I could have stretched out my hand, sent pestilence upon you, and I just have wiped you off the face of the earth. But what he's trying to do is not just wipe Egypt out. That's not his plan. No, his plan is not just the annihilation or the elimination of Egypt so that Israel can be exalted and stay in that land. That's not what he's doing. He's also demonstrating, and what his main goal here is so that he will be lifted up and that Pharaoh and all of Egypt will know that he is God. That's the plan that he said. And I'm not making that up. It says, verse 16, "But for this purpose I have raised you up to show you my power so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth." That's the goal. It's not strictly the exit of Egypt. It's not of Israel from Egypt. It's not strictly the Exodus. There's much more at play here. Much more at play. So God is intending to show his power to Egypt. I believe also he's intending to show his power to Israel, something they're going to struggle with. As they get out of Egypt and they get into the wilderness, one of the things they continually struggle with is the power of God and his rightful place for them. And so he's showing them from the beginning that's who he is. And in introducing himself to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt, he's also doing the same thing for Israel as they watch what's going on. So he goes on and says, "You are still exalting yourself against my people and will not let them go." So he goes on to say, "Behold, about this time tomorrow, I will cause a very heavy hail to fall, such as never been seen in Egypt from the day that it was founded until now." So this seventh plague is a plague of hail, a dramatic hailstorm, a cataclysmic hailstorm, such as has never been seen, it says, in Egypt from the time it was founded as a nation until now. That's going to be a significant hailstorm. But he says, he gives them the warning. He says it's going to happen about this time tomorrow is when it's going to happen. So you have a day. You have a day to get ready for this, he says. The day you get ready for this, you can. And so he goes on. I'm not going to actually read out, just to summarize. But he says, so everything, every beast, every man, everything that's in the field will be destroyed by this hailstorm. But if you are wise and listen and hear and you move yourself inside and you move your cattle and your beasts and your stuff inside, they will be spared from this hailstorm. They'll be spared from the hailstorm. I think that's miraculous. I think that's miraculous. That shows that this is not just a natural occurrence or a natural event. How is that? Well, okay, so if there's a hailstorm that hits Kansas City, right? And does a house or a car or something that is does that get spared from the hail? No, it does not. If you have vinyl siding on your house and have ever experienced a real good hailstorm, you know your house doesn't get spared. There are radical events that happen through a hail. It gets everything. Hail doesn't just, there went the word right out of my head. It's not going to come. It doesn't, selective, thank you. Yes, I knew someone could do that. I need sometimes. Hail is not selective. It hits everything. But here, It's a selective hail. It's going to affect the fields and not the houses. Because God says, if you get your stuff into a house, if you get yourself away, it's not going to affect. It's going to kill everything that's in the field. So there's a selectivity to that. And because of that, I think that shows the supernaturalness of this plague. It's not just this random big hailstorm that came. It's God at work accomplishing what he said he's going to set out to do. And he's showing them, showing Egypt, I'm God. Now, this is actually an attack an attack on one of Egypt's gods. The god's name is Nut. And actually, she's a goddess. Her name is Nut, and she was the sky goddess. She was the sky goddess. So everything that came from the sky would have been, you know, something that she could fix. She could fix. Well, obviously, she couldn't fix this because it happens. It happens. So there's the warning. There's the thing, get your livestock, so it says in verse 20, whoever feared the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh hurried his slaves and his livestock into the houses. Whoever did not pay attention to the word of the Lord left his slaves and livestock in the field. So the next day comes, Moses does exactly, he stretches out his hand and this hailstorm comes. And this is, hailstorm is described in terms that it is something that I don't think we can really imagine. I mean, I don't know how big the hailstones were, but they had to have been incredible because they come and they crush everything. This is a hailstorm that's not just localized. So what is hail? Well, hail is water particles, right? Anybody know the cycle of a thunderstorm? Huh? Because I was an air traffic controller, we got to do this twice a year, right? So in a thunderstorm, there is what it's called convective activity. The sun heats up clouds, heats up the top of the clouds, and that begins to get lift, and the clouds lift, and so it lifts up this. There's enough power in that thunderstorm to move dirt particles around, and they go up, and water gets around them, and they freeze. They come back down, and the more updraft you have, the more power you have in a thunderstorm, the bigger the hailstones get. Okay, and generally, the hail core is a small portion of an entire thunderstorm. If you're ever watching the tornado warnings, whatever, and you're looking at radar, and you see the purple, the really bright purple, usually the thunderstorm itself is huge, and there's this little bright purple hail core, that's where the hail is. The bigger that thing is, the bigger that hail core is, the larger the thunderstorm is, and typically the bigger the hailstones are going to be because there's a lot of powerful lift coming through that thunderstorm. That's why, you can ask Al Reno, an airplane will not fly through a thunderstorm because they will get torn apart flying through the thunderstorm. They'll get updraft, downdraft. That's why whenever there's you remember in Dallas back in the 80s, there was this DC-9 that was trying to land at Dallas-Fort Worth, and he came and he got a updraft just before he hit the runway, and so he was pushing down, and then he hit the downdraft, and it pushed him right into the ground. That's the power of a thunderstorm. That's the power of hail. And so you had that going on, but it wasn't just localized to a little small hail core. These hail cores stayed over the fields and pummeled the fields. Just pummeled the fields so that everything in the field, if it was man or if it was beast or if it was plant, was absolutely and totally destroyed. It's interesting, in western Kansas, whenever there's a thunderstorm, this is the airspace I worked was out in western Kansas, and whenever there's a thunderstorm, there are these guys, there's these crazy lunatic guys, they're called cloud seeders. And they get out there and they fly around inside these thunderstorms, seeding the clouds. And I never quite figured that out. So Brian, being the bold guy he is, asked, why are you seeding clouds that are already there? Why are you doing that? Why are you seeding clouds that are already there? Well, the reason they do that is because they're trying to make it heavier. They're reducing lift so that the hailstorms get so big, so that crops don't get destroyed. Now, they don't do that in the wintertime. They do that when the crops are up. And whenever there's a big thunderstorm, there's like five guys that get out there, and they are lunatics. I saw one night I was working a guy. Here's story time. One guy was working a guy who, he was at 18,000 feet, and the next 10 seconds, he was up 24. A 6,000-foot updraft, just instantly. It's incredible the power that's there. But these thunderstorms, they can do terrible damage on a field. That's a natural thunderstorm. This is a supernatural thunderstorm. that God intends to show his power to Pharaoh through. And this supernatural thunderstorm is going to destroy everything. The Lord, it says, Moses stretched out his staff toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire ran down to the earth. I've never seen a hailstorm that had fire with it, except what I'm thinking is, you know, typically with a thunderstorm that has heavy hail core, there's a ton of lightning. There's a ton of lightning, both cloud to ground, cloud to air, and cloud to cloud. There's a ton of lightning that comes with a thunderstorm. And as you imagine, the power of this thunderstorm, the strength of this thunderstorm, I'm confident there was a significant amount of lightning that accompanied this hailstorm. And so it would have appeared as if it were hail and fire falling from heaven. What does lightning do when it hits something on the earth, typically? It starts a fire, right? It starts a fire. If you got a shake shingle roof and you get a thunderstorm and a lightning strike hits that roof, your house is going to burn down. I promise it's going to happen because lightning is it makes fire. So I think that could be what's going on here. But we do know that even in Revelation, there's going to be hail mixed with fire described in Revelation. So and again, rather than necessarily trying to attach a natural understanding to it, it could be a very supernatural thing where fire actually is falling from heaven. It does happen, and it happens other places, and it would happen here. So there's these huge hailstorms. It says there was hail and fire flashing continually in the midst of the hail. Fire, that's why I thought lightning, fire flashing continually in the midst of the hail. It's a lightning flash. And it had never been in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. So how extensive was the damage? Well, the hail struck down everything that was in the field in all the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And the hail struck down every plant of the field and broke every tree of the field. But there was a place where it didn't happen. There was a place where the field wasn't affected. But in the land of Goshen, where the people of Israel were, there was no hail. So imagine, again, this is a supernatural hailstorm. The houses didn't get affected, and Goshen didn't get affected, but the fields got destroyed. The fields got destroyed. That's not natural. That's not natural. So Pharaoh sends and calls Moses and says, okay, and this is the first time he says something like this. First time he says something like this, he says, this time, the other times I'm okay, but this time I have sinned. The Lord is right, and I and my people are wrong. This is the first time he's ever said anything like that. Before he said, okay, this is really miserable. I don't like this. Can you ask God to make it stop? Because remember, his guys couldn't make it stop. Ask your God to make it stop. This time he actually says, I have sinned, the Lord is right, and I and my people are wrong. You notice he didn't take all the credit for it. He didn't take all the blame for it. Who was the one making this decision? Was it the people making the decision? Was it the people of Egypt that were, yeah, don't let him go? No, that wasn't. They were not making the decision. The person making the decision simply was and singly was Pharaoh. But in his acknowledgement of sin, he says, God is right, your God is right, and I and my people are wrong. So we will let you go. And you shall stay, I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. Moses says, as soon as I go out of the city, I'm going to stretch out my hands, the thunder will cease, there will be no more hail, so you may know that the earth is the Lord's. But as for you and your servants, I know that you do not yet fear the Lord God. And here's the extent of the damage. The barley, it says, the flax and the barley were struck down, for the barley was in the ear and the flax was in the bud, but the wheat and the emmer were not struck down. They are late in coming up. So this was probably early spring that this happened, because the wheat and the emmer, whatever that is, were late in coming up. And so it hit the barley crop and it hit the flax crop, but wheat didn't get affected. Yeah, Ron, go ahead.
After that,
Yeah, Ron was just saying it sets the time. So probably this is late April, maybe early May. But it because it says the barley was in the it's in the head. So the barley was just about ready to be harvested. So it's a really devastating time for if you were a barley farmer. Really devastating time because you just lost all your crop. It's gone. It's gone. But all the food isn't gone because the wheat still hasn't come up yet. Wheat hasn't been affected. It's going to be affected, but it hasn't been affected yet. So Moses understands what's coming up. So he goes out, stretches out his hands, Lord says, and the rain and no longer poured upon the earth. And here's a terrible word, verse 34. But when Pharaoh saw the rain and hail and thunder had ceased, he sinned yet again, hardened his heart, he and his servants. So the heart of the Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not let the people of Israel go, just as the Lord had spoken through Moses. So this is a devastating plague on Egypt. People and livestock have died for the first time. People have died for the first time. Livestock died before, but people for the first time have died in this plague. And it's the closest so far that Pharaoh has gotten to saying, okay, go. But again, his go was not a go forever. His go was go for 3 days and come back. That's the go. That's the ask to this point. He hasn't said, and he hasn't even been asked to let them go completely. Okay, actually, the let them go completely is going to be his own statement after plague number 10. He's going to say, just get out of here completely and don't come back. But the ask to this point from Moses has been, let us go and come back. Not ever the plan of God. God's plan always was to work through these plagues so that Israel would be let go completely from the land. That's all. That's what he's been planning, and that's not me making it up. God said that to Moses back in chapter 5. He said that to Moses back in chapter 5. That's the plan. So seventh plague is hail, and it gets worse. It gets worse because here comes the eighth plague. The eighth plague is going to be locusts. Locusts. And this is an interesting interplay because Pharaoh's actually going to give in this plague. Pharaoh's going to give in for a second. And he's going to begin to negotiate some terms that aren't God's terms, they're his terms. So let's just get in real quick and see what we can do. Wow, we're making good time. The Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh. Remember, plague number 7, in the morning, go out to Pharaoh as he's going to take his bath. Plague number 8, just like 2, 5, and 8, go into Pharaoh and say this. And again, here's interesting. Did the question is typically asked, did Pharaoh harden his heart or did God harden Pharaoh's heart? And the answer is absolutely yes. And you see that just in just a couple verses. Look at verse 34 of chapter 9. But when Pharaoh saw the rain and the hail and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet again and hardened his heart, he and his servants. Look at chapter 10, verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants. Who hardened their hearts? Yes. Yes. That's the right answer. And why? So, God, what are you doing? Why are you hardening Pharaoh's? Why don't you just let him go? Why don't you just let him go? Well, there's a purpose. What is the purpose? That I may show these signs of mine among them. And you, here's where we find out. It's not just about Egypt learning a lesson. It's about Israel learning a lesson. Because he says that you, that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your grandson how I've dealt harshly with the Egyptians and what signs I've done among them, that you may know that I am the Lord. See, his plan was always to build a remembrance, to give Israel something to talk about with their kids about him. The plan was always that Israel would take these things and see what God had done and then spend time talking with their kids about what God did. He does that on purpose. He does that as, if you recall, when the folks, the children of Israel are crossing the Jordan to go into the land, he says to 12 guys, 12 of you, one from each tribe, pick up a rock. As you go across, then build an altar on the other side, not an altar for worship. It wasn't an altar that there would be bulls cut or and lambs offered there as sacrifice. That's not what it was for. It was to build this thing so that when you were out walking with your son and your son said, "Hey, Dad, what is that thing over there?" You were supposed to say, "Well, let me tell you what God did. Let me tell you what God did." And then "let me tell you what God did" should go all the way back to the plagues and the works that God had done to get Israel into this land of promise. So that's what he wants to do. He wants to build a nation that knows him, because really the nation didn't know him very well at this point after 400 years in Egypt. They didn't know him very well. So he wants to build a nation that knows him. So that's the purpose. That's why Pharaoh's heart has been hardened by both himself and by God. So the Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh, this is verse 3 of chapter 10, said to him, "Thus says the Lord God of Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let my people go tomorrow, I will bring locusts into your country. They shall cover the face of the land so that no one can see the land." Yes, sir. That's true. Yep, that's true. That's a good point. When Moses left the palace, the hail's still coming down, right? The hail doesn't stop coming down until he gets out to the field and puts his hands up and says, "Stop." So he walks through a hailstorm where everything is being damaged. Everything is being destroyed except this little halo around him. I mean, you know, you see the pictures of the guy walking with the dark cloud above them, and everybody's got, he's walking in the dark clouds every place else but above him. So it just demonstrates the supernaturalness of this storm. This is not a naturally made storm. It's not just, the winds really got bad and blew up the storm. This is a supernatural storm. And we're going to get a supernatural plague of locusts coming. My dad, when I was little, would always say, "We got there quicker than the locust-covered Kansas." I never understood what that was. You know what? Quicker than the locust-covered. And then I read about the locusts, how they ate everything across the Midwest. This is worse than that. This is worse than that. This is a locust plague that no other locust plague ever. And what are locusts? Locusts are not the cicadas. Okay. I grew up always being taught by my grandpa and grandma and those people that those things that are in the trees that are go wee, 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 those things that hatch out of their shell, that those were locusts. Those aren't locusts. Those are cicadas. Locusts are grasshopper-like things that eat grass and eat plants. That's what locusts are. So that's what's going to happen. If you refuse to let the people go, tomorrow I'll bring locusts into your country. They shall cover the face of the land so that no one can see the land, and they'll eat everything that's left. Everything that's left will be devoured. And this is not this isn't going to your house and be protected. This is actually, if you didn't like the frogs, you're not going to like the locusts, because he says they shall fill your houses, the houses of all your servants, of all the Egyptians, as neither your fathers nor your grandfathers have seen from the day they came to this earth today, this day. Then he turned and out from Pharaoh. And now Pharaoh gets some pressure. Pharaoh now gets some pressure from his servants to "Will you just stop? This is getting old. This is getting old." But if you understand Pharaoh, you can't say that to him, because he will just kill you. You have to negotiate. So the Pharaoh's servant said, "How long shall this man be a snare to us?" Whose fault is it? Whose fault is it? Who's the one at fault for these plagues coming on Egypt? It's Pharaoh's fault. But these guys are skilled in their negotiation process. They know they can't point the finger of blame at Pharaoh. They got to point it somewhere else. So they point it right back at Moses. "How long will this man be a snare to us? It's his fault. Let the men go." And it's here. "Let the men go, that they may serve their Lord. Do you not understand that Egypt is..." Page turn. Come on, fingers. "Egypt is ruined." So Moses and Aaron were brought back to Pharaoh. Okay, so he apparently he listens. But did you understand what they said? Let the men go. Not let the people go. Let the men go. They're saying, let's bargain something. Let's negotiate out of these plagues. So Moses and Aaron are brought back. They said, go serve the Lord your God. But which ones are to go, Moses said. So he actually understands. We will go with our young and our old, with our sons and our daughters, with our flocks and our herds, for we must hold a feast to the Lord. But he said to them, Lord be with you. If ever I let you and your little ones go, look, you have some purpose in mind. No, go, the men among you, and serve the Lord, for that is what you're asking. They were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. So here it is. I'll let the men go, but everybody else has to stay. And Moses says, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. You're not going to negotiate terms. You're not going to dictate terms. It's going to be all of us. Young, old, men, women, little ones, and cattle. And Pharaoh says, that's strange. There's obviously some kind of subversive plan going on here, because if you take all that, you've got another plan in mind. You've got another plan in mind, and you're not going to come back. That's what he's thinking. But he knows that the men aren't going to go out by themselves and leave everybody else back there. At least that's what he thinks. Knowing Israel, I don't know. They may have just, whoo, yeah, freedom! But his plan is to hold a ransom, to hold hostages for the men to make sure they come back by not letting the old folks, the women, and the kids go. And Moses, that's not acceptable. And Pharaoh says, that's the deal. You either take the deal or stay where you are. Moses and Aaron leave, and don't accept the deal. You know, they push the no deal button, and it's no deal. So they go out, and Moses, the Lord says to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts. They may come upon all the land of Egypt and eat every plant of the land, and all that the hail is left. Moses stretched out his staff, and the locusts came. They came every place. They covered, look at verse 15, they covered the face of the whole land. So the land was darkened. I mean, just imagine looking out at a field and the field seems to be moving. That's what it would have looked like, because the field would have been moving because it would have been covered with locusts. It would have been covered with locusts. So the God that's being affected here is the God Sepepia. And he was considered the protector from locusts. That's what his main function was to protect the land from locusts. Didn't do a very good job of protecting the land from locusts. And it's interesting, even the magicians have now even stopped trying to duplicate. They've stopped trying to make it stop. They stopped trying to duplicate. The magicians have basically given up at this point, recognizing we can't do anything. We have no power against these things, no power at all. Here's the devastation. The devastation is this: not a green thing remained, neither tree nor plant of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. So that's where it is. Moses has stretched his hand. The locusts have come. They devoured every green thing. They've covered the ground completely so that you can't even see the ground. They've eaten everything. And then Pharaoh says, okay, get Moses and Aaron back here. He hastily calls them back and says, I have sinned against the Lord your God. Now, he is even going a step further. He acknowledges, in the first time he says, I have sinned. Okay? Now he's going to say, remember what he said in the first place? First place, I don't even know your God. Who do you think you are bringing your God before me? Now he says, I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. Now, therefore, forgive my sin, please, only this once. You know, just don't go too far. And plead with the Lord your God only to remove this death from me. So he went out from Pharaoh and pleaded with the Lord, and the Lord turned the wind. I love this. The Lord turned the wind to a very strong west wind and blew the locusts into the Red Sea. And what happened? Verse 20. Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go. So Pharaoh recognizes sin, recognizes he sinned against the Lord. It's interesting, though, he doesn't ask the Lord to forgive him. He asks Moses to forgive him. He asked Moses to forgive him. What's that accomplish? Not much. Not much. And I love it. Just this once. I was not wrong necessarily all those other times, but this time, yeah, probably. So this once, would you forgive me this one time? How about the other 8 times, Pharaoh? But as the plague is lifted, once again, Pharaoh does what Pharaoh's good at, hardens his heart. Actually, the Lord hardens his heart, and Pharaoh says, you're not going to go, not going to go. So as we saw plague number 9, Pharaoh says, you're not going to let Israel go. And so without warning now, plague number 9 comes. Remember plague number 3, number 6, number 9, all come without any kind of a warning from Moses to Pharaoh. This plague is darkness. And it is a plague that is actually launched at the most powerful god in Egypt. Okay? The most powerful god in Egypt was the sun god Ra, or Amun-Ra. And he was really the if it wasn't happy from the Nile, then it was Ra from the sun, because everything, and this is typical of most Middle Eastern kind of cultures, actually early cultures, that their primary god that they saw was the sun god. And in Egypt, the god's name is Ra. And so what this is the last god besides Pharaoh himself that's going to be attacked. That's not the word I'm looking for, but that's the word I'm going to say because that's the word that's in my head. And so what this is going to be is darkness. And not darkness that's just darkness, but darkness that you can feel. That kind of darkness. Mike has told the story of a time when he was in a cave. He and a group of friends went spelunking in a cave, and they went down deep, and they had flashlights. And at some point, one of the scholars in the group, I say that term, said, "Hey, let's turn off our flashlights." Yeah, not going to do that. They turned off the flashlights, and it was. He tells of the overwhelming darkness, where you couldn't, you know, there you couldn't see a thing. There's total absence of light. Okay, in a cave, I get that. I can't fathom that when you walk out your door. I can't fathom that walking outside, and that's the kind of darkness. I've been in a total solar eclipse. You know, by the way, August 21st, I guess, we're going to have a solar eclipse. Don't look at it. Please don't look at it. Or you'll have a total eclipse for the rest of your life if you do that. But August 21st, there's supposed to be a solar eclipse. I don't know if it's total. It is total. Okay. So it's going to get dark in the middle of the day. I remember when I was like in third grade, we had one of those, and it was so weird. It was so weird. You're in school in the middle of the day and you see it getting darker and darker and darker. And then by like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it is completely pitch dark. There is no light from the sun. And I'll tell you, it was really, really strange and really, really eerie. It really was. I guess that's coming again August 21st. But imagine a period of time, for an extended period of time, when you can't see the sun, when you can't see your face, when you feel darkness. That's the darkness that's coming. That's the darkness that's coming for and upon Egypt. Let's just read what it says. Says then, the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward the heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, and a darkness to be felt. That's darkness. When you feel darkness, that's dark. That's dark. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was pitch darkness in the land of Egypt for 3 days. 3 days of darkness. The sun, I mean, usually a solar eclipse will last the total thing, 10, 15 minutes, but complete darkness for 3 days. Darkness you can feel for 3 days. Yeah, Ron?
The implication to me here is that it's not just the sun darkened, but that they have no artificial light either, except in Goshen.
That's also what I understand. After reading this, that's, I think, some of the super, you could say, if you were to try to naturally explain this stuff away, you could say, well, it was some kind of massive solar eclipse. I don't know how you get there, because I've never heard, I don't think it's ever been historically recorded, of a solar eclipse that lasted 3 days. I think we'd have big problems if the moon stayed in its place for 3 days. All right? I think there'd be big issues there. So I don't think it's a 3-day solar eclipse. But even if you were to try to say, okay, that's what it was, I think it goes beyond just the sun. I think it's artificial light. The light from fire also is giving, it's also extinguished. You may be able to build a fire, but it's the darkness is so feelable, the darkness is so thick that you can't even see the light from a fire. Now, that's impossible, right? No, it's not. It's absolutely not impossible. You ever been in a thick fog? You ever been in a thick fog? You notice I did not say heavy fog? There's no such thing as heavy fog. Fog is thick, not heavy. Anyway, So if you've ever been in a thick fog, a really thick fog, it can, and you're trying to see a car coming at you, especially when you're driving in like mountains and there's a huge thick fog, it extinguishes light. It extinguishes light. You can't see lights of cars in front of you. If you're driving in a thick fog, you know, people tend to have wrecks in thick fog because they come up on the person in front of them too quickly. Why? Because they can't see their lights. So if this is a darkness that's feelable, it very possibly could be an extensive thick cloud that moved through Egypt that extinguished, didn't necessarily put fires out, but extinguished the light that would come from those fires. That's how I would describe this. Yes, Chris. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, there is a good. Yep, I would agree. Hanseling, you had something? Did I see your hand go up? Oh, you're scratching your eye. Don't ever put your hand like that. I think you're raising your hand, man. Especially if it's you, because you usually do argue about something. I don't think you, and I think to describe it, and one thing I'll take issue with what Chris said, that we've all tried the cave thing. No, we have not. No, we have not. Nor will we ever try that. Yeah, Mike. Yes. There's a progression. If you walk through the plagues, we're not going to do that right now, but if you walk through the plagues, there's a progression from first to last that moves from Pharaoh hardening his own heart to God being the one who hardened his heart. There's this progression that walks through. By the time you get to number 9, it's God that's hardened Pharaoh's heart. And it's said that way. So, yeah, it's interesting to trace that progression sometimes. So, yep. I think we do. I think it just goes to show, and again, what's the purpose? The purpose of these plagues was so that Israel could recognize God for who he is. And I think that in this hardening of Pharaoh's heart, God is showing it wasn't just a human reaction to selfishness. This is the accomplishment and fulfillment of his plan for release for Israel. So that, why? So that they, years from now, can look back and tell their kids and their grandkids, this is what God did to get us out of Egypt. Remember, it wasn't about, the 10 plagues are not about getting Israel out of Egypt. God could have done that 1,000 ways. He already told Pharaoh that. He said, if I really wanted to, I could have stricken you with pestilence and killed all of you off. And then Israel could have left on their own volition without any problem. He could have done that. But that's not what he's about. He's not about getting Israel out of Egypt. That's part of the purpose. But what he's doing is he's showing himself as God in all the earth, as God in Egypt, and as God in Israel. That's what he's doing. That's why all these things are happening. And I think that's why it progresses the way it does. So to Israel recognize this wasn't a selfish guy who hardened his heart. This was God showing himself to us. They need that. They need that really badly, and they don't get it. They don't get it. We'll get there as we continue to progress through the Pentateuch. They don't get it. And I don't think they ever get it. They'll finally get it in the millennial kingdom. That's when they will finally get it. So that's, oh, wow, exactly 9:45. So that's plague number nine. Plague number, we didn't actually finish it yet, so let's do it real quick. Darkness covers, and then so what does Pharaoh say? Pharaoh called Moses and said, "Go serve the Lord. Your little ones also may go with you. Only let your flocks and herds remain here." So now he's moving away from even not just men. Okay, take everything, everyone with you, but leave your flocks here. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Who's going to tend our flocks while we're gone? That's not going to happen. Moses says, so what are we going to offer for sacrifices? If we leave our flocks here, how are we going to sacrifice? That's what we do to worship God. We offer sacrifices. We have nothing to offer as burnt offerings that we may sacrifice the Lord our God. Our livestock must go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind, for we must take them to serve the Lord our God. And we do not know what we must serve the Lord our God until we arrive there. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. The third time, actually, Mike. The Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to him, "Get away from me, and take care never to see my face again. For the day you see my face, you shall die." And Moses said, "As you've said, I won't come to you again. I won't come to you again." And that gets us ready for plague number 10. And we'll talk about that one next week. So let me pray, and then you guys can. Yep. Father, thank you again for your hand that demonstrates your faithfulness and shows us who you are. I pray that you would help us, even as we look at these plagues, to recognize your powerful hand, the ability and power you have that far surpasses anything we can even imagine. I pray that you would encourage us through your word, through your truth. We ask this in your name. Amen. All right, you're dismissed. Thanks.